towering icy cliffs with peaks like pointed turrets sit in water with a night sky with aurora above. Green letters appear. Disney Nature. An aerial view takes in sprawling lush wetlands.
Botswana, in southern Africa. Home to a third of all Africa's elephants. And the last place on Earth where they are free to roam vast distances, as all elephants once did.
An elephant herd travels in a single file line.
Disney Nature's documentary film, Elephant, will tell the story of these epic journeys.
A truck with a camera mounted out in front of its hood travels alongside the herd.
Behind the scenes, the crew's journey was also underway as they followed the elephants on a 1,000-mile round trip through some of Africa's most hostile places.
A modified truck loaded with equipment drives through water up past its tires. Wind whips sand at the elephants.
By following them on their road trip, the crew would gain an entirely new perspective on these remarkable creatures.
Mark Linfield, director.
Why an elephant road trip? I think it's because the amazing migration that these elephants undertake hasn't been shown before. And also the challenges that these elephants face along the way bring out the best in our elephants. And obviously the journey itself is stunning. You have three, four, five countries all together through which the elephants can move through this amazing area of southern Africa. It's a chance for people to see a part of the world they might not have seen before.
The entire southern third of Africa is covered by the giant Kalahari Desert,
a sepia-toned map of Africa.
The first challenge for the crew was going to be finding elephants in this vast wilderness. But there is one special place where elephants gather every year. Seasonal rains flow into the desert, creating the Okavango Delta and the starting point of our journey.
A line traces down from a mountain range. As the line spreads into several branches, the river appears in real life. A title appears, In the Footsteps of Elephant, Disney Nature. In the Okavango Delta, water wends its way through tall reeds.
Our film crew wanted to get one step ahead of the elephants. So they called upon local wildlife filmmaker Mike Holding, who has over two decades of experience in the Delta.
He steers a small boat.
Mike's role would be finding and filming elephants, as well as sorting out the sheer logistics of this massive expedition.
A light single-engine airplane takes off from a dirt runway and soars over the Delta. Mike Holding, cinematographer.
You're talking about a vast area, 10,000 square kilometers. It's really like a needle in a haystack trying to find ellies and other animals in that mosaic of water and islands. So one of the reasons we spend a lot of time in the plane, in the air, looking at the movement of the flood is it's the only way we can actually see where the different movements and the changes are happening and where the animals are starting to congregate.
The plane flies low over water and beside lush trees.
I could do this for the rest of my days. Flying over the Delta is one of the most amazing things. Anybody who's ever flown over the Okavango will tell you this is absolutely the way to see it, because you really get a sense of the scale, massive, unspoiled wilderness, and just sheer beauty. It's absolutely spectacular.
The Delta's blue waters and green vegetation spread out to the horizon.
Mike's first challenge is to choose a location for the crew to camp that is close to the elephant action, but not impossible to reach.
There are no roads around here. There's very little mapping information. So the plane is incredibly useful, really, to identify a route in for the vehicles and which way we can go, which rivers we have to cross, where it's too deep, and then we try and put that into practice on the ground.
But, you know, it's pretty tricky because there's a lot of water on the road to get up here, so when the trucks and the convoy and everybody, you know, set out to come and find this camp, they're in for a few challenges and surprises on the way.
The plane banks low over the water.
Getting the crew and 5 tons of camera gear into the heart of the Okavango Delta was going to need some serious custom-built transport.
In a cavernous garage, workers weld, spray paint, and cut into several large pickup trucks. Sparks fly from the tools. the trucks have open beds, no doors, heavy-duty tires, and metal frames on the sides to hold camera equipment.
The crew called these mean-looking machines swamp trucks.
A convoy of the swamp trucks travels across dry land.
The mission for day one? To reach the heart of the Delta and set up camp before nightfall.
Clinton Edwards, field guide.
And now, the adventure begins.
The convoy heads down a sandy path, only wide enough for one vehicle. A man steers on the right side of one of the trucks. Presley Mbeha, field guide.
This is the bottom part of the Delta, just about 20 kilometers from Mount.
A truck drives through high water. A man standing knee-deep directs it.
Yeah, straight.
It wasn't long before the swamp trucks were put to the test.
So that was basically the first of five crossings that we're going to be doing. Potentially the shallowest one.
Duncan Rolls, field guide.
The deepest crossing, they say, pushes water through the gear lever notch inside the truck. That would mean the water level would be about here.
He shows a place on the truck about chin high. Later, crew members hook straps to the trucks and cover spots with black tape.
So we've got the big six-wheeler truck, which is going to pull us through this really deep crossing. We're hitching each vehicle, basically creating like a long snake of vehicles. We'll have vehicles switched off, and we're going to block up the exhausts, lift everything onto the roofs. The trucks are literally going to haul us through.
A subtitle, what can go wrong?
That's not a good question.
The convoy starts down a road buried in several inches of water. As the six-wheeler tows the swamp trucks, the water gets higher. Water fills the open-air trucks. It covers Duncan's lap at the wheel of one of them.
Ooh, here we go, swimming. Everything's completely underwater.
Duncan stands on the side of his truck and holds out a hand like he's surfing. Presley grins as the trucks make their way out of the water.
Wow. That was an experience. Shaky, but I'm okay.
On a narrow dirt road.
As the rest of the crew rush ahead to make camp, cameraman Martin Kulbeck and expert guide Presley Mbeha are stopped in their tracks. Out of nowhere, a family of elephants appears. They're highly agitated, but it's not clear why.
Martin Kulbeck, cinematographer.
It's pandemonium.
He aims the camera from a seat mounted on the outside of the truck.
Got lots of excitement here, lots of... Oh, that's lovely. Wow.
And then all becomes clear.
A baby calf stands in tall grass with its mother.
We've just found a newborn baby. And it's staggering around. It can hardly walk. Probably born, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours ago. It's really, really young. It's amazing. It's lovely.
The crew draw on their decades of experience to film without disturbing them.
The problem I've got is Ava's a big bull in the way. It's okay. Okay.
A large elephant eyes Martin.
The problem I've got is that this grass is very, very long. So it's very, very hard to see the baby. This male is being a real pest.
While the bull was clearly annoying the new mother, the fact that she was happy to stay close to the vehicle was a good omen for filming in the Delta.
That's okay. Everyone's very excited here. We've got the rest of the family behind us. What's really interesting is that she's using the car as protection. She's trying to get away from this male.
The mother and baby stand very close to Martin and his camera.
And there's the baby. Oh, that's very sweet. Look at that. You can tell by the pink ears. It hasn't got particularly pink eyes.
The mother touches the baby's face with her trunk.
That's very sweet. And I can see the umbilical cord. Look at that.
A great start to the shoot. An elephant encounter before they'd even arrived at camp. And a rare chance to film the first steps of a newborn.
Meanwhile, Duncan digs out a truck's tire. Another vehicle lies on its side.
On the road ahead, the rest of the team were having far less luck.
So basically, we've just got three vehicles stuck now. Literally 5 minutes ago, we had a trailer unhitch itself and land upside down. This is getting a little bit frustrating.
We just got to keep going. That's what making elephant films is all about.
Crew members push a truck out of a ditch. Later, the convoy continues on.
After 15 hours on the road, the front of the convoy finally drew into the site that Mike had located for their camp. This remote island was to be home for the next 6 weeks.
Mike gave me this point from his flight, so he gave me this as a GPS point of where he wanted the camp to be.
As the crew sets up camp, elephants roam past.
The camp was all set up, but the elephant filming had delayed the rest of the crew. Would they make it before nightfall?
Tell my mother I love her.
Clinton grins as he drives off into increasingly deeper water.
We've absolutely no idea what's going to happen up in front. We've still got 50 kilometers to go.
A swamp truck sits stuck at a slight angle.
And driving 50 kilometers in the Delta can take an hour or all day.
We were trying to get out. We couldn't get out, so we decided to use the winch. And then when we were winding it back in, the screw came out.
You see it?
Which holds the actual cable in place. So we had to take the whole thing out and then try and manipulate the metal. Luckily, I've got delicate fingers, and surgery was successful. Now we see if it pays off.
With one end of the winch cable tied to a tree, the swamp truck's wheels spin.
No, it's going to take them all day.
Clinton pumps a car jack.
How's it looking?
At night, the last two cars arrive.
The rear guard finally make it into camp. But their struggle just to get here has brought home the scale of the challenge.
At the camp, Mark greets Martin. They sit around a campfire.
Martin arrives tired but elated from filming the newborn. But he's also concerned how quickly they disappeared from view. The crew realize they need a way to keep track of the elephants. Fortunately for them, help is about to arrive.
Two trucks move through the Delta. A man behind the wheel observes elephants.
Biologist Mike Chase has been counting elephant populations in Africa and tracking their journeys across the Kalahari for over a decade.
Yeah, I've got a visual. She's in front of the woolly caper bush. She's heading south.
Dr. Mike Chase, director-founder Elephants Without Borders.
Well, I'm a fifth-generation Motswana. I've always just felt a very deep sense of belonging and tie to elephants. These are the world's largest terrestrial land mammals, and I was mesmerized by them, and I always have been intrigued and fascinated.
An elephant drinks water from a large blue bucket.
And that's not just in the wild. Mike and his partner Kelly also devote huge amounts of time to rescuing and nursing young elephants that have been orphaned by poaching or human conflict back to health.
In a large pen, a young elephant plays in a mound of dirt.
Their hope is that these junior elephant ambassadors will help local kids to connect to their wildlife and care for its future.
Mike's partner Kelly grins at another young elephant.
I think people around the world think all too often that there are a lot of people saving the elephants, and they aren't really. And so to be part of a privileged few committed to safeguarding the future of elephants, I derive a great amount of enjoyment from that.
Mike Chase and Mike Holding climb into the single-engine plane.
Both Mikes share a passion for Botswana's elephants, and today they hope to find a particular herd known for traveling great distances.
The epic journey that Botswana's elephants embark on, it's untold, because contrary to popular belief, not all of Botswana's elephants are confined to within Botswana. They have this ability to cross international borders. They don't need passports. So our satellite telemetry data has recorded elephants moving out of Botswana through Namibia into Zambia and Angola, some of the largest home ranges ever recorded.
Mike is convinced data from his satellite-tagged elephants could help the crew with their filming.
So one of our collared matriarch cows has the tendency to gather in this area during the dry season, where she congregates in a large herd with other matriarchs.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can pick her up. We have the VHF tracking antenna on and see if we can get a ping from her satellite collar. Her up, I can't hear anything yet. It'd be great if we can get a visual. You hear it?
Yeah.
Definitely there's a ping there.
If we can pick up that concentration, that'll be amazing
okay.
at the beginning of the film. Because really, if we can start establishing family groups and, you know, that we can follow throughout the film,
okay.
it'd be really good if we could find somebody in this group.
They bank over marshy land dotted with trees.
Nice loud signal now.
Yeah.
As Mike Holding pilots, Mike Chase peers down at dozens of elephants.
Well done. There she is.
Okay.
Nice.
Brilliant. Well, that's fantastic. And all of these herds will probably stick around together for a while, Mike.
Oh, definitely, Mike. You've got at least another month or two.
All right, great. Well, it's not the easiest area to get to, but we can handle that part. Well, it's great.
At the camp, the two meet with Mark Linfield.
This is the last place left in the world where elephants can still wander as they did 100, 200 years ago.
Mm.
For the simple reason, they have the space to do so.
Wow.
It's nearly 260,000 square kilometers.
Wow.
That's why you're having difficulty finding elephants.
That'll be it then.
So we've satellite collared nearly 300 elephants, and you can see all these dots on the map are GPS locations on their migration routes.
So how often do you get updates?
Every hour we get a GPS location.
So you can literally tell us where they are?
Absolutely.
So what are we waiting for?
Well, let's do it.
Now, what am I doing right now?
I need a good internet connection,
and
I will give you all those locations.
That would be amazing. Bring it on.
A boat moves through a wide stretch of water. Trucks travel across swampy land.
Our elephants have the ability to move 1,000 kilometers a month, often over terrain that is inaccessible for vehicles.
A swamp truck powers out of a ditch, spraying mud.
It's very remote. It's difficult to traverse. Very thick sand, swampland, deep rivers, thick bush. It's unforgiving. And this is some of the perilous journeys that elephants undertake, and keeping up with them as a film crew is going to be a difficult task.
A boom-mounted camera hangs out in front of a boat.
At first, the filming boat did keep up with the elephants, but it wasn't long before they'd moved out of reach of conventional transport.
Of course, our elephants, whilst they're moving, they're not moving in places that are very vehicle-friendly.
Oh, right over the camera.
So a lot of the time, we have to launch the drone, follow them by drone. If the distance is too far, we've got to pick up the journey with a helicopter. It's just trying to keep up with them. It's been a technical challenge.
A helicopter takes off from a bright green square and zooms out over a nearby channel of water. Later, the helicopter soars over the vast delta. On board, Mark points out his window. Down below, a network of dark blue channels of water cut through vibrant green land.
This time in the air also revealed how the channels of the delta are formed by its wildlife.
A hippopotamus emerges from underwater with a great splash. A herd of elephants walks through a channel.
It was important to film the elephants' water world from below as well as above, which carried its own unique risks.
In a boat, a man in a wetsuit points.
Big croc.
Yeah, big one. Yeah, big crocodile on the bank. Nice 4 or 5 meter crocodile.
Seasoned underwater cameraman Roger Horrocks knows how dangerous diving in these waters can be. Every year, the narrow channels are carved out by the massive hippos and elephants, which can be lurking round any corner.
Roger gets in the water in full scuba gear.
When Roger's in the water, he has a safety diver with him, as well as Mike, supervising from the boat.
As Mike Holding waits in the boat, Roger checks his regulator, then submerges himself in the brownish water of the river.
One of the things with the delta is the massive surprise when you go underwater is the relief and the structures of the pathways that are made by the hippos, and the plant life is the structure of the plant life is just astounding. It's gothic, it's organic, and the palettes are incredible.
Sunlight beams down through the surface, brightening the green plant life below.
The hippos and the elephants are the architects of the delta, and you can see, you know, they use their bodies to actually create these pathways. You know, they're huge. I mean, you can swim down the channel made by a hippopotamus. You can actually see the girth. It's huge.
Tall stalks of reeds and green grass form the boundaries of an underwater channel. In a wide pool, Roger briefly lifts his head above the surface. On the boat, Roger sits in his wetsuit. Roger Horrocks, underwater cinematographer.
You know, the producers want nice traveling shots which show the water traveling down the delta, and the only way to do that is to kind of just travel down these channels. And you don't want to really put a boat down ahead because it muddies it up. But of course, the danger is you never know what's up ahead. So for me, this drift diving is probably the most dangerous thing you can do, just because of the, you know, the uncertainty of what lies around the corner.
Roger and his safety diver lift their heads from the water.
Wow, it's very beautiful. It's a little bit scary though, we can't really see.
It's so different.
They hear the boat coming, they slip into the water, and in these narrow channels there's nowhere to maneuver. So you'll be around a corner and you'll be on top of him before you know it, and then he's going to bite you. And that's not good for him, it's not good for us. Not optimal.
Fish dart out of the way in the sandy wake of something moving quickly along the bottom. A crocodile slinks backwards off a large underwater rock and disappears in the churned-up sand. The crocodile comes up on and passes beneath the safety diver, who holds a blade in one of his gloved hands. The crocodile swiftly moves away, its long swishing tail stirring up clouds of sand. Roger and the safety diver surface. Matthew Van Godem, dive assistant.
Came up across the pond, little pool, deeper pool. And I was following Roger, and literally out of nowhere, this croc came between the two of us. I pulled on Roger's fin. He turned over and started following the croc. It was really cool, but it all happened very, very, very quickly.
Underwater, the croc darts away.
The vis is not great, so just, you know, puts him on edge. He can't really see us. So we're not going to do any more diving on crocs until the water cleans up.
They climb into the boat.
No. This drift diving should be double pay.
Danger pay.
Yeah, no.
A hippo, visible above the surface from the nostrils up, slowly submerges completely underwater. Martin rides on a camera platform mounted on the side of a swamp truck.
Spending day after day filming the elephants, the crew began to fall in love with their many unique and endearing eccentricities.
Tanya T.J. Jenkins, associate producer.
They have individual personalities. They have the same dynamics as we do. The aunties fight, the sisters fight, the teenagers scream and fight, the boys show off and mock charge. And you can really, really identify with them.
A young elephant runs in tall grass.
I think it's their sense of fun.
Martin grins. He films a playful young elephant.
I know it sounds strange for an animal to be talked about as having fun, but I'm genuinely convinced that they do.
The young elephant chases warthogs around a dusty clearing.
If you watch them chase warthogs, if you watch them chase imaginary enemies, if you watch them disappear into bushes backwards and then ambush, I mean, they just have a wonderful sense of fun. They do this floppy running when they basically let everything loose and their trunk goes and their ears go. Elephants, I'm convinced, have a wonderful sense of humor.
Mark Linfield.
I think one of the favorite flood scenes we captured is a young calf chasing lechwe and egrets through the water, like some naughty kid chasing animals through their garden. It really, really captured their personalities.
Mike Holding.
I definitely have more elephant friends than humans. You know, elephants, they're really gentle, they're really caring, they're really intelligent, they're really entertaining. I don't know too many people like that. And I'd much rather spend a day with Ellie's than most of the people I know. That's some of my friends accepted.
As an elephant shakes out its floppy ears, Mike copies, shaking his head.
But some of the best moments for the crew were when unexpected visitors would arrive in camp.
Near the camp, an elephant shakes a palm tree and golf ball-sized nuts fall.
We woke up to the sound of rattling palm trees, and these two guys are standing here shaking the palms, knocking the nuts down, and basically joining us for breakfast. Slightly different diet, but nice. It's quite a shock when you get up for your morning coffee. You've got a couple of elephants shaking the palm trees around your tent. Quite noisy though, you know they're here.
an elephant shakes another tree.
They'll spend days and days in this island because it's full of palm nuts. So we're going to have neighbors for a while.
Right. An elephant lifts a palm nut off the ground with its trunk and tosses it into its mouth. Presley holds a nut.
Mmm. Tastes like ginger. I've eaten this before, so if you just eat one whole nut, it just makes your mouth very dry. The nut is just feeding on something else. It's feeding on the rain tree. Because there are no nuts here altogether. There was one bull, he ate all the nuts. So it's very unfortunate for him, so there's nothing. Well, I've been a guide for 22 years. So I actually know the animal behavior. And this elephant is very calm. That's why I'm just this close to him. Even the generator is on right now. It doesn't even bother him. So he just comes so close. So then we just worried that one day he might just come to the middle of the camp, and that's when we're just going to have a problem here. We just have to scatter in all directions.
A group of antelope graze on yellow grass.
A few days later, the crew had other visitors that were much less welcome.
A lioness prowls nearby. Martin films the antelope and lions from his mounted seat on the swamp truck.
We found a pride in the middle of the day, which is very unusual. Three lionesses and 7 8-month-old cubs. And almost immediately we found them, they started hunting.
The pride, led by 2 lionesses, dart across the grassy field. The antelope sprint away. Martin Colbeck.
The camp is right here. The zebra and the wildebeest all formed a tight bunch, but not far from the camp. But this lioness was absolutely determined. And sure enough, she went again.
The lioness trots along at a brisk pace. A young woman watches from a truck.
This time, straight towards camp.
Zebras flee through the camp.
Okay, we've got lions in camp hunting.
Subtitles. Okay, Danny, do you copy?
Yes, Bryce, go ahead.
So are you in the car with Alfred?
Yeah, we're already in the vehicle. We had all the animals just run through camp, and I have no idea where this lioness is. You guys see the lioness?
Just don't move, all right? Just keep looking in front of the car there. Any second, she'll just step out. An impala dashes past.
I just saw an impala.
There she is, there she is, there she is. Right
there. The lioness chases down the impala. Later, Danielle Spitzer, field assistant.
My view in the car was very limited. I could just see out the side. I could see out the front. The whole back of the car is blocked, so I couldn't see anything behind us. So it was, felt like you were in a box, and you can only see out of, you know, a certain window, which I think made it even more terrifying because she could be anywhere behind you, and you just wouldn't know. She could be under the car, and you wouldn't know. So it was just, it was insane.
You have to remain seated in the vehicle.
Okay, yeah, copy that. Just let us know what's happening.
In the car, Danielle puts down her radio.
Apparently, this lioness is still somewhere here in the camp, but we have no idea where she is. So we're just going to wait and hopefully hear from the guys if they've seen her, but she's completely gone. We have no idea.
Danielle gulps. Her companion, Alfred, points. A lioness slinks away from them. Yes. Just right now, she just came out into the open, so all the 10 lions, they are visible to us. I'd say you are very safe. The lions, they've gone across the island and killed an impala. They're eating an impala.
Okay, copy that. We'll just stay put at the moment.
Okay, I'll just let you know when to come out. Maybe you can just drive out here so that you can see them as well.
I was really concerned. Out of nowhere, you can suddenly have a pride of lions running through your camp. Danny and Alfred were in the camp walking around. They could easily be killed by lions.
Sunlight shines between a tree's bare, crooked branches.
As the dry season advances, the Delta transforms into a dangerous and hostile place. Its channels now filled with treacherous quicksand and sticky mud.
Of course, the delta dries out every year, and the elephants have to make this journey every year. So every year, the water holes become glutinous.
An elephant struggles to stand in thick mud.
The elephants are very stressed at this point. There's virtually no food, the water's drying up, and so they're at their most vulnerable and stressed. And for me, the most emotionally challenging was filming a baby that got stuck in the mud.
A baby tries unsuccessfully to pull its head from the mud.
Very quickly, this situation turned into a life-threatening situation. This calf became completely locked in this mud. But what was amazing was that had it been a first-time mother, I'm pretty sure that calf would never have got out. But the fact that it was a very, very experienced matriarch, she was incredibly calm and she knew exactly what to do. And I've never seen anything like it before in 20 years of filming elephants. She realized that she had to enable it to breathe. So she lifted its head out of the mud and actually lifted its trunk, curled her trunk around its trunk, cleaned the trunk off so she knew it could breathe. And that's extraordinary. In the meantime, she then had to work out how to get this calf out of the mud. It was a very, very hard thing to shoot because I knew how serious it was. I was convinced that this calf wasn't going to get out of the mud. I really was.
The matriarch digs a path in the mud with her foot.
It was getting weaker and weaker. She didn't have a solution in the short term. And so I thought, we're going to lose this calf, you know. And here I am filming it. What do I do?
The matriarch pushes the calf upright with her leg and trunk.
But in those situations, I think you have to become very detached. You are witnessing something that would happen irrespective of whether we were here or not. So we're not really in a position to interfere. We should be there as documentary filmmakers recording that incredible behavior. And of course, she got it out. So if we'd have interfered, we'd have altered that outcome, possibly.
The baby calf follows the matriarch out of the mud puddle. The other elephants in the herd look on.
When the baby came out, I'd never seen a baby covered in so much mud. It looked like it was dropped in a whole vat of chocolate. It was just this elephant-shaped blob of mud. And I haven't witnessed a matriarch being so calculated in rescuing a calf.
The key role of the matriarch was soon to be demonstrated again.
Dozens of elephants leave muddy ground for drier land.
The next day, they all disappeared. And we know from Mike, where he was filming, and other people, that they all disappeared on the same day. They then left the area completely, which means that all those families were coordinated. They were making decisions. Someone had made the decision. One of the matriarchs, several of the matriarchs, realized that the water was drying up significantly and that they had to leave that area. And that's a big decision for a clan of elephants to make.
The herd crosses a stretch of desert. Mark Linfield.
I think one of the biggest challenges of this film, actually, has been to get into the mind of an elephant.
Quick flashes show cracking land and birds taking flight.
The old joke about elephant memory is absolutely accurate. They have highways mapped into their heads. They know where they're going. And that's data that's been passed down for hundreds and hundreds of years.
A lion laps water. A view rockets across dusty brown earth.
Usually with the animals that we follow, once you can second guess what they're going to do next, that's when things really start to work and gel. The elephants, that is a real challenge because I don't think I've ever worked with an animal that is more other. You know, they do so many of the things that we would sort of recognise. Yeah, they have tenderness towards their calves and to an extraordinary degree. Their social life is super duper rich. They are superficially so like us, and yet they are so different that our powers of prediction on this film have fallen spectacularly short on so many occasions.
Up till now, the film crew had only managed to follow behind the elephants.
A man mounts a spherical camera rig to a truck.
It was time for a new forward-thinking filming strategy. So they decided to take a stabilized camera, normally used for aerial filming, and mount it to the front of the truck. This allowed them to film the elephants on the move and not fall behind on the journey.
This piece of kit is generally designed for helicopters. We've now mounted it on a vehicle to get us ground level and give smooth tracking shots.
Tom Walker, cinematographer.
We're physically bumping around, so it's quite hard to tell. But then you look at the image, and the image is smooth because of that axis. It all rotates around the central point. So the results are smooth, but I'm physically bumping around.
Mike Holding, cinematographer.
What's fascinating is it's a whole new way of telling a story, and that's what it's all about. So for years and years and years, I've filmed elephants with a long lens on a tripod, and in any sort of scenario where elephants are moving, you might get two opportunities as a shot, you know, one coming towards you and one going by. With this machine, you've got almost infinite possibilities if you stay with them. And so because we're trying to tell a story about a big epic road trip across the desert for these ellies, this is absolutely incredible, because what it does is it allows us to travel with the ellies. And if we can do that, then the audience is drawn into the story and everybody feels that journey much better than if elephants were just passing by the camera.
Just when the crew starts making progress with the new system, the elephants start covering a lot more ground, so Mike must take to the skies to catch up.
The single-engine plane flies over the desert.
Once they've left the delta, the herds travel up to 30 miles a day as they hurry to reach the edge of the vast, scorching desert.
The herd follows a path.
The last few days, we've actually seen hardly any ellies at all, and they were last seen heading off into an area which is of some concern. They're heading out of the dry land and towards an area of habitation. And of course, that's not necessarily a good thing for elephant herds. So I've arranged to meet up with some elephant researchers that I know well, who live in this area and who monitor the movement of elephants, in the hope that they might be able to give us some idea whether these groups of elephants are going to be moving into this area.
The plane lowers toward a dirt runway. As Mike lands, he waves to a few people waiting by a covered pickup truck. He gets out of the plane, and they greet him.
Mike meets up with his friends, Graham and Anna, who are transforming our understanding of elephant movements by living amongst them.
They travel by canoe. At a home, two little girls greet them.
Their family home is in an area of the Delta where once elephants roamed freely, but now large numbers of people also live and farm.
Dr. Anna Songhurst, director, the Eco Exist Project.
It can be a challenge bringing up children in the bush, but it's also a big adventure for both us as parents and also for the girls. The reason of coming to this area particularly was because this is an area where there's about one elephant to every person. There's a really high incidences of conflict and competition between people and elephants for resources and space.
Dr. Graham McCulloch.
If you really want to understand what the situation is really like, what it's like to live with elephants, you only truly understand that when you live permanently in amongst 15,000, 20,000 elephants. You know, this is our piece of land, and when we first moved in here, we love elephants, but all of a sudden now elephants are knocking your trees over and pulling up your water pipes and, hey, hold on a minute. You know, it's a different story. Living with 5-ton herbivore that wants to eat everything around you is one thing. Living with 15,000 of them, that's a massive, massive deal.
This is where the elephants hang out quite a lot,
yeah,
in this area. And then the main corridor comes down here.
Anna draws lines on a map for Mike.
Like that.
Yeah, okay, and this is where we are now.
Yeah.
You can take me to where you think they might cross. We could put up camera traps there. We could go and look and see.
Yeah.
If they're coming down through this area, either one of those three major pathways, that'll be the place to look.
Square patches of farmland edge a savanna.
Today, a mosaic of farmland and human settlements is encroaching on the Okavango Delta.
A long dirt road cuts through the land,
disrupting ancient pathways that have been used by generations of elephants.
We mapped all of the pathways and we monitored them. 13 of those pathways were used more frequently than any others. And so those 13 are where the corridors now are.
So the ones I was pointing out there are like these ones.
Yeah.
The corridors then are made up of a main path plus a kilometre either side for a buffer. And then that means that now the land authorities will not allocate any more fields inside a corridor.
They wait on the side of a road.
those corridors will be left free, so that as we move forward and the population grows for people and elephants, there will always be space for the elephants to move, but there'll also be space for people to grow their crops and feed their families.
Dr. Mike Chase, director-founder Elephants Without Borders.
Elephant corridors are lifelines. They are vitally important in allowing elephants safe passage to food and water. Without corridors, we sentence elephants to maximum security, living in a very small, enclosed habitat. And corridors give elephants the freedom of Africa.
A herd crosses the road on a protected corridor.
They need space. The world's largest terrestrial mammal needs to wander.
A visit to their local corridor reveals that Anna and Graham's dream of giving herds safe passage is working.
Herds of this many, you see them coming at nighttime, but in the daytime it's rare to see this many elephants coming down here. This is incredible.
Anna and Graham watch dozens of elephants pass.
The peaceful corridor has become a busy elephant crossroads.
They look over their shoulders, then point and grin. Dozens more elephants cross about 100 yards up the road.
Hundreds.
They look between the two large groups of elephants passing on either side of them. In one group, a calf trots along beside its mother. Anna grins wide-eyed at Graham. As they turn to watch the others pass, a large one looks right at them.
Amazing reaction.
These corridors hint at a future where people live peacefully alongside elephants, allowing them to move freely day and night.
In a night vision view, elephants walk along the corridor. Daytime, Graham and Mike sit at a laptop.
Mike and Graham review hours of footage. They're pleased to see the herds the film team have been following have also passed this way in the night.
Big herds as well.
Yeah. Now, if we know that they've come through here, having lost them,
we
can just follow the highways out now, the pathways.
And pick them up.
And pick them up, And it means we can stay with them, which is really useful.
Brilliant. It's a fantastic one. Wow. Cool.
Mike's plane soars toward a series of water holes connected by paths.
Mike heads out towards Botswana's border with Zimbabwe. A vast network of paths stretches out, linking the last remaining water holes. They are key stepping stones on the elephant's final leg of the journey.
This is one of the big elephant highways, and it's a very bleak desert scene. And just watching those herds, the matriarch, the little ones struggling through that desert heat and the dust, and totally uncertain of whether the path they've taken is the right one to the next waterhole and the next waterhole, because of course they need water every few days. It's really high risk for these Eddies, and thank goodness they have this mental map and they have this ancient knowledge, because that's what carries them across the desert.
Mike's plane passes over one of the pathways.
In the dry season, when we were trying to film elephants out in the baking heat, we were having to wait for them by small waterholes. We had crews scattered throughout the landscape using Mike's surveying and satellite information to help get us to the right places.
As the herd walks single file, a truck arrives at a drying waterhole.
As we film the elephants on their road trip, all sorts of things have made me realize how sentient and intelligent and emotionally sensitive they are. But there was one scene in particular that I was filming with Martin where the elephants came across the bones of a dead, we presume, relative, we don't know.
As Martin peers through the eyepiece of his camera, the elephants lift their trunks in an S-curve. They all walk slowly toward the bleach-white bones and skull of an elephant resting on the dirt.
It's one of the most extraordinary and poignant things to witness with elephants, because they go into a very different sort of frame of mind. They're very, very quiet, and they're very sensitively touching key parts of the skeleton. It's usually the skull, the tusks, the lower jaw, the pelvis.
The elephants gather around the remains. One sniffs the skull, passing the end of her trunk over it.
They don't respond in the same way to the bones of other animals. So they clearly know that the carcass is that of an elephant. and it's absolutely remarkable to witness.
An elephant slowly flaps her ears as she touches the jawbone with her trunk. TJ Jenkins.
Elephants coming across the bones of another elephant, and the gentle way that they touch the bones, sniff them, almost as if they were trying to work out who this was, how they died. And it's a mourning, and it's just their respect for each other and care is really, really beautiful. I think that is really special.
A mother passes a slender bone to her calf.
The elephants just were picking up the bones, passing them between each other, drooling on them so they could get more taste and smell. They spent 10 or 15 minutes apparently reminiscing about an individual. Who knows? I never know. But
it was very moving.
As each elephant passes the skull, they touch it with their trunks.
This set of bones exemplified the fact that the decisions that the matriarchs make and the matriarchy makes across the clan are actually crucial to the survival of the family, and they have to get it right.
The sepia-toned map shows a dotted line heading toward a spot labeled Victoria Falls.
The elephants complete their 500-mile journey as they reach the shores of one of Africa's largest rivers.
A few crew members stand on a tiny island.
The Zambezi is an elephant paradise. Its secluded islands have plenty of food and fresh water to sustain them for the next couple of months. And the team are in perfect position to film the first arrivals, as well as reveal one of the most dramatic and extraordinary landmarks on the elephant's road trip.
Mist rises from a majestic waterfall.
Victoria Falls is the world's largest curtain of falling water. Over 2 million gallons per second cascade into the gorge, creating Mosi Oatunya, the smoke that thunders.
In a dry clearing, a drone lifts off.
To capture the enormous scale, the falls must be filmed from the air. But even with the very latest, most advanced drone, this was a nerve-wracking job for the crew.
Mark Linfield.
The shot that we're trying to do, which is slightly insane, is to drop the drone down in this V by Cataract Island and swing around where this lovely light is sharpening, and then come round so that the shot opens up and you can see the whole fall. At the moment, the trouble is we're getting lots of spray on the lens. I mean, you can see out there, it's just absolutely insane. There's just spray everywhere, thousands of tons of water a second going over the lip, and we're flying a drone right through it. It's one of those stupid things.
The drone flies between two craggy cliffs and into the heavy mist of the falls. A bearded man peers at a screen attached to a remote control, his thumbs on two joysticks.
I'm very confident that Russell is a superb drone pilot, but he's going to need to be. That's nice.
Mark peers through a lens hooked up to the drone controller.
I can only imagine looking out there how many updrafts and downdrafts are going to be. Any one of them could suck our drone right down into the gorge and trash it.
The drone flies close to the falls.
He's coming. It's nice. Okay. No, let's bring it back.
Good. I'll see you now.
Okay.
They land the drone in front of a statue of an explorer with a hand on his hip. Mark and a crew member lie next to the drone, examining its many high-tech components.
The trouble is we're flying a brand new, really expensive drone all over Vic Falls, and it's soaking with water, and we think this is one of the reasons why it might not be behaving correctly. As we come over the waterfall, all the spray is coming up and drenching the rotors, drenching electronics, and then we're losing control of the gimbal.
A view from the drone rises as it takes off again. The drone soars over a nearby cliff and heads straight for the rushing water of the wide falls. Russell McLaughlin, drone pilot.
It's always nerve-wracking, this, flying it in the waterfalls like this. The challenge is, I mean, we've got a lot of spray from the waterfall, so getting the camera wet, getting the drone wet, and there's a lot of wind at the moment, and downdraft and updraft. I mean, the wind's just crazy around here. You just never know what's going to happen, but it's definitely the hairiest bit of filming, and I think everyone can agree with that.
Let's just do that same run again. That's good. That's good.
The drone captures a rainbow over the falls.
That's it. That's nice. That looks lovely. It's very, very tall. Very cool, Russ.
A view from directly above takes in the gushing water.
Okay, let's bring it home. Bring it home.
The drone lands safely on a narrow paved path. A crew member gives a thumbs up.
Woohoo! Well done, guys!
The stuff we got at the end was just incredible, so... Yeah, and I'm relieved it's down on the ground, so... Damn happy.
Poor Russell, that was one of the most nerve-wracking days of his life. We basically said, all right, up you go with $80,000 worth of equipment, fly it over Victoria Falls and don't crash it. And luckily, he didn't crash it, and the last shots looked absolutely amazing. It was gorgeous orange light and this amazing vertiginous drop, which was, yeah, something else. I've never seen Victoria Falls like that. They're incredible.
The gushing falls fade to a slow trickle.
2 months later, and the waters have receded. It was time for the elephants to head back to the Okavango Delta and for our crew to once more follow in their footsteps.
The elephants' feet pad across rocks covered in an inch of flowing water. The film crew's convoy travels down a paved two-lane road.
The team was back on the road again, heading away from the Zambezi. The next stop for the crew was Wangi, Zimbabwe's largest national park. Here, the herds were avoiding the heat of the day by traveling at night. The crew knew they were heading straight into lion country.
Against the starry sky, a lion stands on an outcropping, licking his lips. At a swamp truck parked near a herd of elephants, a crew member works on a mounted camera. Gavin Thurston, cinematographer.
Just in the last year, cameras have come out now which are able to see in pretty much near darkness and film in colour. We've got a very specific filming period with these low-light cameras at night, so we were really hoping this behaviour was going to happen while we've got enough moonlight to be able to film by.
In pale evening light, the truck rolls forward, the low-light camera mounted on its front. They stop near a pride of lions. In the low-light camera's viewfinder, a lion sleepily covers her face.
A lot of us guides never really get the opportunity to see what predator interaction goes on during the night. So it's kind of a unique insight into something that we really, really get the opportunity to experience. So excited and apprehensive because not knowing what to expect.
Elephants near the pride.
The night cameras reveal how little the elephants can see at night.
A lion with a bushy mane scares them off. A young lioness yawns.
I've had experiences before where young lions have taken an interest in a vehicle, but not to the degree that these youngsters did.
Staring right at us, she gets up and stalks closer. A view from a camera at the back of the truck shows the lioness with her nose right up to the lens of the camera mounted on the front. She sniffs the camera and its mount curiously, then lifts a paw toward it. Someone in the truck shines a flashlight in her face, and she backs off.
Hey. The important thing is to make sure that you're always calm, and the guys switch their flashlights on, and the lion backed away instantly.
As she walks away, a second lioness approaches.
And the other one's coming up.
They shine a light on her.
As soon as they actually figured out that we were not something to play with, they accepted us almost as if we were part of the pride.
The second lioness walks away. Gavin sits inside the truck.
Well, when she got up and came towards the camera, she came close to the minimum focus. I was trying to focus on her as she came towards us. Minimum focus, I think, is 80 centimeters. That's quite close when you're in a vehicle with no doors on at night.
In a close-up, the lioness yawns, showing her pink tongue.
Very cool cats there. Until one bites you.
Night after night, Gavin and Clinton keep a watchful eye on the lions, which didn't seem the least bit interested in the elephants.
A lion rolls over.
Everybody keeps telling me these lions are the ones, which, you know, are super active, as you can see.
One's got an eye.
One rolled over twice.
An elephant saunters past the lounging lion. A lioness flops onto her side. The swamp truck rolls slowly along the edge of a watering hole where more than a dozen elephants gather in small groups.
So, yeah, all's pretty quiet around at the moment.
The lion on the outcropping settles his head on his front paws.
For now, the elephants are safe from the lions. But as these old bones show, that isn't always the case.
Two cops play near bones. Clinton Edwards, field guide.
One of the big differences between filming during the night rather than the day is a lot of the predators are less nervous of our presence. So your vigilant level has to be quite high. And also, you know, you're dealing with night in, night out. And, you know, your body starts to take strain. So you're walking all night and then trying to catch up during the day. So it gets quite tough.
Clinton yawns and folds his arms. A full moon shines bright. Gavin stands by the truck.
So when you work at night, it's very important to stay vigilant. And it's really good that the three of us are out here keeping our eyes open, ears open for any strange sounds or predators or whatever. But there's something. Is that lion at the back?
He slowly creeps around to the back of the truck.
It sounds like a lion roaring.
He finds Clinton curled up on a bench in the truck bed.
I was hoping the guide might be keeping his eyes open for us, but it appears the night's taken its toll.
Gavin steps away. Clinton sleeps peacefully. Gavin returns and jokingly points off and mimes a lion attack. He runs off and Clinton continues to snore. Later.
Yeah, after talking about how vigilant we should be, and I fell asleep on the bench seat in the back and then basically roared like a lion in my sleep.
Thanks,
Clinton laughs. At night, people in the camp move in fast motion.
Even though the crew was out looking for lions, when you camp in the middle of Africa, you're always sharing your space with the local wildlife.
In gray night vision, two elephants walk down a path. In a large tent, the crew eats.
Whether you know it or not.
On the path, a hyena's eyes glow. At another time, a person stops in the path to look down a perpendicular walkway.
Have you ever had the feeling you're being watched?
As he continues on, two elephants scamper along behind him. At other times, smaller cat-like animals with glowing eyes dart across the path. An elephant walks away, then a man, then a leopard, then two guys playfully crawling on their hands and knees. Stars fill the sky over the lit tent.
For the last few nights, the lions had disappeared from the area.
A lion stands alertly.
They returned on the full moon. And with empty bellies.
A cinematographer peers through his camera lens. Clinton glances at us. Been waiting a long time for the lions to come back. Finally, after 4 days, a pride of lions have come back to us. A herd of elephants moves through a clearing at a brisk pace, then stops short. A lioness roars from an elevated mound of dirt. Several sleeping lions perk up.
Right, that female's up.
A lioness leaves the pride and stalks toward an elephant and her calf.
Oh, she's on it. She's on it.
Gavin peers intently into his camera, focusing the lens.
The other one's up.
As the first lioness comes up behind the calf, a second stalks over.
This is it.
As the mother elephant goes after the first lion, the second chases after the calf and pounces.
She's got it, she's got it, she's jumped on the back. We gotta move, we gotta move.
All this was captured by the behind-the-scenes cameraman, bravely shooting the action from the open back of the filming truck.
The truck moves in for a closer shot. Louis LeBron Brown, behind-the-scenes cinematographer.
To film all of the action happening, so for me to film Gavin and his reaction, and for me to film Clinton and all of the things going on, but I'm in the back of an open Land Rover. There's lions surrounding the car, all in kill mode, and there's a mother elephant who is really agitated, trying to protect her calf, running straight towards the car.
The mother and her calf run away from the whole pride of lions.
She's coming your way, coming your way.
A half dozen give chase, then slow. Later, Gavin rubs his face.
God, that's pretty intense, really.
The second lioness pounces on the calf's back.
I think for me, as soon as I saw that lion go for the elephant, in my heart I was thinking, don't kill it, don't kill it. And I suppose I was quite relieved that Mum actually managed to chase it off. And that's pretty good mothering, really, to be able to chase off eight hungry lions, you know, as a single elephant.
The mother and her calf run away from the lions, and they give up the chase. Later, the orange sun hangs low in the sky. A truck sits parked near the lounging pride.
The next morning, the crew return to the scene of the attack. As expected, the lions were still in residence. But surprisingly, our elephants were also close by.
I remember hearing all the sounds before coming around the corner. It was mayhem. The elephants were so distressed. We couldn't work out what was going on. And then we saw they were all looking at the same place, looking down at the ground where the matriarch was lying. She was still alive, but only just. It was as though the family realized they were about to lose their leader and all the information and knowledge she was holding.
Without a doubt, the grandmothers, the matriarchs of a family group, are absolutely critical to the survival of the rest of the elephant family. They are the oldest, wisest leaders within the group.
The herd gathers around the matriarch.
Occasionally they'll make mistakes and there are fatalities along the way, but for the most part, these animals are incredible. They know where to go and they know when to go.
One touches the matriarch's face.
I think what intrigues me most is their relationships. And of course, the longer time you spend with them, the more you know what those relationships are like. And you can sort of start to untangle what goes on between relatives, the bonds between the individuals, and the emotions that you get with these individual relationships.
One member of the herd curls her trunk upward, then slowly lowers it.
Our film is really all about journeys. You've got the journey of the water from Angola into the Okavango Delta. You've got the journey that our herd goes on, the road trip. But actually my favourite journey is the one taken by a female who starts the film as the second oldest female of the herd.
With her trunk, she gently flips the matriarch's ear to cover her face.
But when the matriarch dies, the herd turn to her to help get them back home, and she has to find it within her and pull on all of that knowledge, pull on everything that she learned from the matriarch to save the herd and bring them back to the Delta.
As the elephants start to leave the matriarch, a young calf pauses and looks back. An older elephant nudges the calf on with her trunk.
The loss of one of the film's key characters was followed by another piece of bad luck for Mark and the crew.
Lightning streaks across a cloudy sky.
The rain season isn't due for 2 months.
Raindrops dampen Mark's shirt.
So, you know, I was feeling a little bit concerned. And, you know, in the end, and we managed to find a spectacular evening sunset scene with Ellie's trekking against stormy skies. So I guess that was a silver lining.
The elephants pass golden light that seeps through the storm clouds.
The crew were in place as the storm ramped up, and the lions sensed opportunity.
One of my favorite nights of the shoot so far. Halloween night, no less. It just felt so atmospheric. We were with the elephants, and out of nowhere, a storm whips up. Sky goes, still going, sky goes dark. Just apocalyptic scene with kind of dust devils and sand. And we actually saw the lions before the elephants did. They came in on our side like this, just through the swirls of dust and lined up in front of the elephants. And then the elephants saw them.
Wind whipped sand around the elephants and lions.
Could have gone either way. We weren't sure if the lions were going to attack the elephants or the elephants the lions.
As the crew looks on from their truck, the elephants walk toward the lions.
Elephants start advancing on them. And then the lions sort of back off. I looked over and I could almost touch them. And luckily they were just completely fixated on the elephants.
very raw, very real. And, yeah, quite a Halloween night, actually.
The camera on the truck backs away from the lions.
As the rains began in Zimbabwe, they were already well underway in the Angola Highlands, the source of the Okavango River.
Above a sheer, craggy cliff, clouds move in, blotting out the blue sky. The fast-moving, darkening clouds sweep over the land. Lightning strikes in the distance. Elsewhere, puddles of water form in a wide, grassy path.
Months later, the floodwaters are creeping back into Botswana and filling up the delta. The leading edge of the flood is moving at over a mile per day, so the crew has had to race to get ahead of it.
Up here, we found this spot. We actually saw it from the plane. You know, if we can get our big crane down there and we see the water coming down as it sort of comes in and trickles and flows and builds, I think it'll be really amazing.
Jonathan Jones, cinematographer.
Okay. Here we go.
The challenge we've got is the sun is dropping fast, and we were going to plan to try and shoot this tomorrow morning, but the speed in which the water has come in now, we're just worried if we wait that overnight it's going to be through here. So we're frantically trying to make this come together with literally minutes of sunlight left.
A weight on one end of a boom balances the camera low to the sand on the other.
Right.
Tom Stevens, assistant director.
So yeah, this water, we're not sure if it's going to come at a walking pace or in inches an hour, so I think we only have one go before the light goes.
Okay, Tom, get me ahead of it, please.
Water trickles over the sand.
Keep going, keep going, keep going. It's very fast, okay. That's good.
The camera glides out ahead of it as Jonathan peers through a detached eyepiece.
Keep going. Keep developing it.
This is the flood of the Okavango Delta. It's unbelievable. Here's come all the way from Angola, and we're standing on the leading edge of the flood. We've just filmed it. This wall of water just comes pouring in over the desert. We managed to catch it, but it's a really stressful moment. You just hope everything's working, but it looked fantastic. And after 3 years of trying, we finally managed to film the flood arrival. It's quite incredible.
Cows arrive.
And now here comes our extras. Where we are right now is just outside the buffalo fence in the Okavango Delta. So this is a cattle area. And this is the water that all of these cattle drink every year, and all the farming communities rely on. And no sooner has it come through than we've got cattle coming to drink. It's an amazing sight. It's absolutely amazing. And it's just been such a struggle, but really rewarding to finally get it.
An aerial view shows the growing river.
The flood in the Okavango Delta has to be one of the most amazing and frustrating things on our planet, because everywhere around here you'll find an expert who's going to tell you exactly when the flood's going to arrive and exactly where it's going to go. And I can tell you, to a man or woman, they are always wrong.
Birds flock over the delta.
Every time the flood arrives, there's a real sense of anticipation, and it's like an old friend returning. It goes from a semi-desert to an Eden in a matter of a few weeks, and suddenly everything's lush, the place is full of new life.
Flood arrives. Mark and Jonathan take to the air to film the magical sight of life returning to the delta.
And what you get up here is just these amazing different colours of green and emeralds and then sand and then yellows, and it's amazing. And it just depends, like you travel like a kilometre, and then within a kilometre it feels completely different.
Far below, the delta water swirls in varying shades of brown and blue.
So, of course, one of the brilliant things about filming aerials is this extra level of context that you get. So on the ground, you just get a tiny window of what's going on. But as soon as you're up really high, you can see, for example, the flood snaking across the landscape and all of the animals gravitating towards it. And you actually get to understand the process of what's going on.
A large herd of buffalo kicks up a cloud of dust all around them as they arrive. Hundreds of the sturdy animals with their curved horns splash into the water. From a bird's eye view, they appear as tiny dots amid the lush green grass and blue water. Meanwhile, the elephants trudge across the desert.
Back down on the ground, the other film crew hangs back to capture the final leg of the elephant's epic journey home.
One of the things that's been working really well is our ground-based camera stabilization system, which has been allowing us to film elephants on the move. And today, for example, we were trekking alongside our herd, and one of the calves was falling behind and it was dribbling and in a terrible state.
The baby steps into a shallow hole and he stumbles forward, landing on his trunk.
And his mother kept circling back to chivvy it on and, you know, nurture it through the situation. You just feel like you're on the journey with them, and it's really effective.
As the elephants plod along on the dry sand, the baby elephant falls behind. His mother takes a few steps backward, allowing him to catch up.
It's tough for them, you know, they lose condition, they're thirsty, they're hot, they're hungry the whole time, there's little to eat. It's a really tough time for them.
As two elephants walk side by side, the cruise truck slowly reverses alongside them, the camera mounted on the hood, aimed at the animals. Behind the others, the baby trudges along, drool dribbling from his mouth, and his little trunk hanging limp. The elephants walk through short tufts of dry grass. At the back of the herd, the baby's mother waits again for him to catch up. She gently lifts his little trunk with her own, wiping drool from his mouth. A huge flock of hundreds of birds soars up from behind them and fills the sky overhead.
Over the course of the filming, the crew came to realize that these elephants can only complete these epic journeys through the Kalahari because of the strength of their family bonds.
The herd picks up their pace.
It's only when these extraordinary bonds are broken, when herds are attacked by farmers or poachers, that calves get lost or abandoned. Something Mike Chase is determined to prevent.
Every elephant counts. And if I'm in a situation to help an elephant that's been orphaned because of human intervention, then it is our commitment and duty to respond. Absolutely.
Mike walks with the three young elephants.
The lucky ones get taken to Mike and Kelly's Botswana Elephant Orphanage.
Mike rubs an elephant's head.
Over the past 5 years, they've learned how to become surrogate parents to some of the world's biggest toddlers.
All the orphans and all the little elephants, they're very emotional animals in the first place. And when they're separated from their family, they have these strong needs and are very dependent and very vulnerable. If you leave them even for a few minutes, they stress, and the stress is what can actually kill the baby elephant. So when they come in, we're with them 24 hours, 7 days a week. We're with them every minute. Somebody's with them, sleeps with them, holds them. A lot of physical contact is important because elephants have a lot of physical contact. They really need to feel a bond and feel that love and feel that care.
Kelly Landon, director, Elephants Without Borders. Kelly, Mike, and others run with the orphans.
Having them together is perfect because the orphans actually comfort themselves. So they're not alone. They have a family. They bond very well. They play. They learn from each other. We just help it. We just help them in the process.
Use your trunk.
Mike puts some food in an elephant's trunk.
Look at two of
you. Elephants are being orphaned or abandoned because of poaching, human-elephant conflict, retaliatory killings, and these little calves that don't have a future if they were left in the wild, they would die.
Mike feeds one with a giant bottle.
Unfortunately, not many local people in Botswana get to enjoy the magnificence of elephants. And to be able to touch and feel and empathize with their struggle for survival, I think is fundamentally key to securing a future for not only for elephants, but for our natural world. Using calves at the sanctuary as an ambassador species to invoke a culture of conservation ethos in our youth is what we're hoping to instill with the elephant sanctuary.
Workers at the sanctuary feed and walk with the orphaned elephants.
Mike and Kelly's work continues to this day, taking in lost calves and providing a brighter future for Botswana's elephants.
One of the film crew trucks travels down a dirt path.
Back in the Okavango Delta, the crew is set to capture the elephants' return to their watery home. A year on the move has brought them back to the very place their filming first began.
Okay, they're coming.
But there is one key character they are all rooting for.
Oh my God.
The herd with the new baby calf arrives, splashing into the water.
They're just splashing and crashing through that water.
The new matriarch has got the herd home safely. Even the new calf. The crew are elated.
Having absolute whale of a time. That is amazing. Oh, my God.
The large elephants walk into deeper water and submerge themselves. Mark grins excitedly at us. Mike Holding.
And it's the story of the journey of elephants, but it's been a journey for me as well, which has been incredible, and there have been some fantastic elephant moments. We've seen them struggling for water, we've seen babies being born, we've seen old Ellie's die, and I think I've learned far more than I anticipated that I would about elephants and their behaviour and their movements just from the process of making this film, and that's been really magical.
Children love elephants. People love elephants. And I think if we can get people realizing, having an epiphany like I did 30 years ago, that these animals are extraordinary and special and we should care about them and we should care about them for our children and grandchildren, I think we will have succeeded. That's what I hope we can achieve.
The elephants splash and play in the water.
In recent times, all we've heard about elephants has been gloomy, it's been centred on poaching and the ivory trade, and we wanted to shine a light on the elephants themselves, emotionally and socially intelligent creatures that really deserve our respect. But also, that this incredible home of theirs, where they're still free to live out their lives as they always have, is here to be saved, if we have the will.
A bird's-eye view soars over the delta.
In his ongoing work to save elephants, Mike Holding teams up with Mike Chase to fly a new aerial survey of Botswana and beyond for the next elephant census.
Words on their plane read, Botswana Elephant Census 2018.
Counting the elephants allows them to monitor the long-term trends in Africa's elephant population. Their work is continuing to help protect and conserve these amazing animals in this most vulnerable period of their history.
Well, there's certainly a lot of Ellies out here. I have to say, I'm a bit nervous of telling Mark about all these elephants because it's almost completely inaccessible, this area. He's going to have a heart attack if he tries to get camera crews out here.
Right.
But isn't that nice, actually, that, you know, just for us to enjoy it, at least.
You know, it's as you say, Mike, they're in the elephant heartland, beyond the reach of man and cameras.
That's kind of nice. You know, not great for the film, but it's nice for the Ellie. Stunning. So how many elephants do you think are here, Mike?
There's
a lot of Ellies here.
This is some of the highest concentrations of elephants in the world. So elephants can aggregate here in their thousands.
Yeah. This is a little piece of paradise here.
Where elephants can be left at peace to be elephants.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, for me, that's very comforting and reassuring.
Yeah.
Given the plight of elephants, that there is still a safe refuge where elephants can disappear into the wilderness of northern Botswana and still follow their ancient migration routes.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this. It's just beautiful.
Amazing country. Yeah.
The plane soars low over the delta's mosaic of blue waterways and green land. Dozens of elephants gather in groups in the water and around trees. Dr. Mike Chase.
Having flown the Great Elephant Census and knowing what I do and seeing the situation of elephants in many protected areas, elephants will go locally extinct. But the upside of that is that I'm incredibly fortunate to be studying and conserving elephants in their last stronghold. This is where elephants are making their last stand. And I think I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be a part of a film like this that sends a message to the rest of the world that elephants are important and the story that you're telling is crucial to protecting and conserving the world's largest elephant population.
Golden sun hangs over a mist that gathers amid tall grass. Silhouetted in the sunlight, two elephants walk past. A pool of rippling water reflects an elephant. In the warm light, a group of elephants throw dirt on their own heads with their trunks. herd passes large leafless trees as the sun drops lower in the sky. As an antelope leaps across the swampy delta, water sprays up with every springy bounce. As a herd of elephants walk into knee-high water, a baby keeps its trunk up. In a muddy watering hole, elephants splash with their trunks, sending wide sprays of sloppy mud over themselves and other members of the herd. An elephant trotting along the edge of the watering hole slips in the mud. Another elephant flails on its side. A baby runs from a much larger elephant. The elephants dip the tips of their trunks into the mud and splash themselves. At dusk, an orange streak paints the horizon over the delta as birds fly off into the blue-gray sky. A herd of elephants flap their ears in the misty air, fade to black. Description by Deluxe, funded by Disney Plus Originals, voiced by Jedediah Barton. A logo, Disney Nature.